I'm John Kroll. Today, as part of our partnership with Side Effects Public Media, we're going to continue our community conversation about important health issues and talk about different ways agencies, sports organizations, and other groups are focusing on sleep wellness and support. My guests will be Side Effects reporter Araceli Gomez-Aldana, Indianapolis Fire Department Captain Chris Moran, and Indianapolis Metro Police Department Sergeant Aaron Snyder. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. Today we're going to continue our community conversation about important public health issues. This is part of our partnership with Side Effects Public Media. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. We're going to be talking about sleep wellness and support, the ways that certain community organizations, sports organizations, agencies, and other groups are focusing on this issue. My guests are Side Effects reporter Araceli Gomez-Aldana, Indianapolis Fire Department Captain Chris Moran, and Indianapolis Metro Police Department Sergeant Aaron Snyder. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. So Araceli, your reporting kind of kicked this off and is the springboard for this discussion. Why don't you talk a bit about what drew you to the story and what led you to believe that this was something that should be explored?
Sure. So it was actually very, very random. I was at an event, at a TEDx women event in Indianapolis, and we were given the opportunity to get a tour of Bankers Life Fieldhouse where the Pacers play. And I was very surprised.
And the fever. All
right, yeah, and the, you're right. Very, very true. And it was bad. Yeah. And then they mentioned that, you know, this is the facility, this is where players work out. And then they mentioned that all of the coaches, who's on the coaching staff, and they mentioned a sleep coach. And so I kind of thought they were joking. And I said, what do you mean a sleep coach? And they said, yes, they consult somebody, a sleep expert, a sleep researcher, to come in and talk to the players about their sleep and how important their sleep is. And the reason that they're doing this and other NBA teams are also doing this is because if players get good sleep, then they perform better. Obviously, we think that, but it's so hard with their schedule. So I kind of started going around asking questions and talking to different NBA teams, the Pacers, the Chicago Bulls, and talk to players, talk to their sleep coaches and experts, and just found out how much time and money they're devoting to make sure that these players get really good sleep. And I thought, wait a minute, there's a lot of people, everyday people, that don't have these resources. So what's going on here?
How much and how much time and money are they devoting to this?
Right. So there are, of course, you have your workouts and you have your nutritionists and everything. They are consulting with their sleep coaches almost daily, and they have a plan in place. So if you're having an away game and it's going to be different time zones, they're saying, okay, you need to go to sleep by this time. And it's individual. Some people need more sleep than others. Mm-hmm. And they have these coaches on staff, right? So that's their sole purpose. And they'll talk about even wearing technology on the players so they can actually moderate, like how much sleep did you actually get last night? Because one of the problems is that a lot of the younger players are staying up playing video games or, you know, other texting or doing other things. So they're kind of like revisiting, okay, well, you said you needed this much sleep. You actually only got this sleep. So it's very, very intense.
Captain Moran, I've known some firemen in my life and career, and just the nature of that work tends to be disruptive of regular sleep patterns. I mean, is this an issue that the fire department's looking at closely?
It is, yeah, definitely. We do a lot of studies and we try to mirror ourselves to what we consider like a tactical athlete type of performance. So we kind of do some studies on special operations and people of that nature to find out exactly how we could get better sleep. I mean, when we're on shift, it's kind of you can't really change how that is. But the restorative sleep the next 2 days are the critical time for us.
Well, and you've got the odd nature of at times you're sleeping in effect in a dormitory with a bunch of other people, not your family, not in what are regular. Have you studied the effects of that?
Yeah, absolutely. During the first 24 hours when you're on shift, it's kind of known that we actually don't get into a REM cycle. Even though we rest and we might fall asleep a little bit, it's not restorative sleep. It's not good quality. So the studies find that the next day we actually just kind of pass out, and it's still not a restorative sleep. So we don't actually get the restorative sleep until the third day, and then we have to go back and do it all over again.
So how are you looking at possibly changing things to get to that restorative sleep? Because it sounds to me like you get 2 days where people are almost zombies, and then on the third day they recover a bit.
Very true, very true. There's two ways to look at it, of what the department can do and then what the individual can do. So we try to change some of the lights at night so they're not so bright. We try to utilize red lights so it doesn't, you know, disrupt their circadian rhythm. And then we really try to educate on how to lower your parasympathetic nervous system so that when you are off work, you can actually get some sleep. So we show up on shift and we're at that heightened level all the time. We really need to focus on those next 2 days on how to de-escalate that nervous system so that we can actually get good quality. So we practice breathing techniques. We teach a yoga class. Just basically trying to bring yourself down so that you can get, you know, recovered from that stressful day.
And completing the circuit of people who have strange sleeping patterns and cycles, we'll talk about the police next, Sergeant Snyder. I mean, I'm assuming that this is an issue of some concern to the people in your line of work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest issue we see is with our late shift officers who, after working 8.5 hours, are getting home about 6 o'clock in the morning when the rest of us are getting up and starting our day. And the big issue we see is if they can't get to bed right away, if they have to go to court. It's huge for our officers to be up for 8 hours, then have to turn around and get up and go to court, maybe get home around noon or 1 o'clock. About that time, maybe kids are getting home off the bus. Now you're looking at 3 or 4 before they're able to get down, before they have to be back in that night to start. What we're finding is about half of our officers are only averaging about 6.5 hours of sleep, and that's across the country, not just here in Indianapolis.
And is Indianapolis, are the numbers there in Indianapolis on track with the ones across the country?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, so I'll throw this to all three of you, and I should say to our listeners, if you're just joining us, we're talking about sleep wellness and the ways that it affects us and the ways that agencies, sports organizations, other groups are trying to cope with it. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So I'm going to ask, you know, some of this stuff, like the nature of the shifts that you're talking about for both the fire departments and, I mean, those have been in place for decades, if not, in some cases, even more than a century. So they're deeply ingrained cultural patterns within your groups. Without changing some of those shifts or expectations, what all could be done to meet this problem? I'll start with Captain Moran just because he made the mistake of making eye contact with me, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts on this.
The fire department's culture has been that, you know, in the history of fire departments, you would go there for a day and then you come back for a day type of thing. So in 1960, we added a third shift. So that's when we went to 24-48. And then in the 90s, we added a Kelly day. So we get our eighth day off, you know, so we get a 5 day break. So we do a lot of restorative in that period. We're not really looking at changing our scheduling. As far as safety, that's the biggest thing we all want to look at. we monitor all of our accidents and any of the runs that we go on, and we've never really had a big significant increase because of fatigue. When we show up, our adrenaline's kicking, and our time on the scene is usually pretty short, so we're pretty good at showing up ready to go. The fatigue doesn't set into our job as much. So what we're really focusing on is the better health alternatives for the firefighter in the next 2 days, the fitness, the nutrition, even educating family members to let them know, or friends, even their neighbors. You know, you got a guy that wakes up every morning at 8 and cuts his grass, and you're a shift worker. You know, that mm-hmm. could be a major problem. So we're really focusing on the education part of a holistic type of lifestyle to mitigate a lot of the health problems, is more along the lines of what we see, not so much as a safety thing. So that's, you know, what we're focused on right now.
Sergeant Snyder, I mean, are there structural changes that the police can make to facilitate better sleep?
Yeah. First of all, I'll start off and say that as police officers, we're really jealous of the firefighters, and not just because they have a place to sleep, because I know they don't get to use it as often as they'd like, but there's actually been a lot more research done in firefighter health and safety and wellness than there is in the law enforcement community. We're just now catching up. I know there's some agencies around the country that are looking at playing with rotating shifts, going from day shift to middle shift to late shift over an extended period of time to allow your body to get better sleep. Here in Indianapolis, we're just trying to educate our officers on, okay, if you are a late shift officer and you're coming home, look at things you can do, such as stay off the electronic devices. The blue light is supposed to inhibit your sleep and not let you fall into that sleep as quickly. Blackout curtains for your room to make that room darker. Cool the room down so it's colder so you can fall asleep much easier. Avoid the alcohol. If alcohol keeps you from falling into that REM sleep and getting a good restorative sleep. Sleep health is huge. It leads to a lot of different medical complications, such as, first of all, starting out with obesity, high blood pressure, a lot of those syndrome X-type diseases that you see a lot of times officers are suffering from. Damaging to the cardiovascular system, mental health issues, increasing anxiety and depression just from sleep deprivation alone.
At the end of the day, I think we need 24-hour service, especially when we're talking about first responders. But I'm actually very excited to see that there's more research in sleep now than ever before. And in the last decade, we've seen a lot more focus on sleep research. And one of the things that I think we also need to talk about is the stigma of sleep. And mm-hmm. I think that with research and the more we talk about sleep, hopefully the better it will get for everybody and how we view sleep as a society.
What do you mean by the stigma of sleep?
Yeah, I think that in my reporting, a lot of the times, too, what I found out is people, if you say, oh, I had so much sleep, I had great sleep, that's not positive. But it is really positive if you say, I just pulled an all-nighter, right? And it's horrible for you.
Oh, I think we see that with our officers a lot of times. They're almost bragging about the fact that, hey, I only got 3 hours of sleep today. I'm still ready to go. I'm up and going. And it's not good.
Well, it's as if acknowledging fatigue is a moral failing or a lack of character, something like that. And that does seem to be ingrained in our culture. Mm-hmm. Question is, what can be done about it? And since you raised the subject, SLA, I'm going to go with you first.
We can just start talking about all of the benefits that come with sleep. And we talk about exercise and healthy eating and drinking water, but we don't ever talk about sleep. And that is a really big factor in our health, especially if we are working in very high stress environments, especially when it comes to aging and memory. So talking about it and being well informed and, you know, making sure that, yeah, you can brag about getting great good night's sleep, and that's a good thing. And I think we should move forward to that.
Captain Moran, is it difficult to get firefighters to acknowledge the importance of getting good sleep? Because this is a culture that prides itself on a certain amount of
discipline. Yeah, we're definitely A-type personalities and don't like to admit that we need rest. I'll rest when I'm dead type of mentality, and we've really got to change that. Both of us are tactical athletes is what we like to refer to ourselves as, and most of what we do when we work out, you know, and all that kind of stuff is for enhanced performance. And most people really lack the biggest part for enhancing performance, which is restorative sleep. People brag about working 60 hours a week. Well, I bet you if you got better sleep, you could have gotten done in those 60 hours in 40 because you're, you know, more efficient, better use of time, more alert, able to react quicker, and those types of things.
So, Sergeant Snyder, same question to you. I mean, is there resistance among police officers?
Not as much, I think. I think most of the time now they're starting to understand the importance of sleep and how by getting a good night's sleep, they're more productive at work. They're better at dealing with the public the next day, and they feel better. We are pushing now more for a physical health with our officers, a lot of exercise, weight loss, and sleep health included in all of that.
We can't deny it. You get grumpy when you don't get enough sleep.
This is true.
Absolutely.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the importance of sleep wellness. This is part of our ongoing community conversation and partnership with our partners at Side Effects Public Media. My guests are Side Effects reporter Araceli Gomez-Aldana, Indianapolis Fire Department Captain Chris Moran, and Indianapolis Metro Police Department Sergeant Aaron Snyder. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about sleep wellness and support today on No Limits. This is part of the community conversations that are a product of our partnership with Side Effects Public Media. My guests are Side Effects reporter Araceli Gomez-Aldana, Indianapolis Fire Department Captain Chris Moran, and Indianapolis Metro Police Department Sergeant Aaron Snyder. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or do what a listener named Andy has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Andy, you're on the air.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can. What's on your mind?
Okay, well, I was listening, and I'm actually at work, and I'm in a occupation myself that requires a great deal of fatigue management. I'm a truck driver, and I was listening to you guys on the radio, and I felt that I had to chime in. So many thoughts about this topic. If I can share my own story, I was finally diagnosed with sleep apnea in November of last year, mm-hmm. and put on a CPAP machine, and it changed my life. I mean, it is. I would get eight hours of sleep at night before the machine and still feel exhausted the next day. And finally getting a diagnosis of sleep apnea has just changed my life for the better. Which actually leads me to my second point. My sleep apnea treatment, the diagnosis, the testing, and the CPAP machine that I'm currently using was all paid for by the company that I work for as part of my employee benefits. And I was just curious to know specifically with the fire and the police department and any other city departments, are those types of programs included in the benefits for city employees? And if I may just make one final point, if sure. anyone out there is listening and they're having trouble sleeping, please, I can tell you from experience, get a sleep test. It might just save your life. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the call and for sharing your story, Andy. So why don't we start? I've been picking on Captain Moran first most of the time, so I'll go with Sergeant Snyder to begin this, and whether there is that health coverage for promoting sleep wellness that Andy referred to.
So a part of our city benefits, and the fire department, the police department, along with the other city employees, have the same insurance that's covered. Do normal insurance of having a sleep study done and getting that taken care of, and then whatever their yearly deductible is. And with Andy talking about being a truck driver, we both know that, gosh, we're not the only profession that has sleep issues and sleep problems. Doctors and nurses at hospitals are working 12-hour shifts, and they have the same issues. But we found with police officers, with around 28% of us are reporting sleeplessness at night, with another 26 reporting falling asleep at least one time a month behind the wheel of their car.
Oh, wow.
And that's a huge issue.
That's disturbing, yeah.
It really is. And my comment with that was a study done of 5,000 police officers. It's not the officers that are on day shift that are falling asleep while they're driving. Those are the ones that are not driving, but while at the wheel of the car. It's the ones in the evening.
So by my math, if that was 5,000, 1,300 of them.
1,300 of them. And I use my own story when I first started as a rookie, where I went from being in the academy, being on day shift, going straight to a late shift position. And the first night coming home from the academy in my personal car about 4 o'clock in the morning, fell asleep at a stoplight. And luckily it was a state trooper that found me and not rolling into another vehicle in front of me. But the problem was the second night, because I wasn't getting good restorative healthy sleep, fell asleep at the same stoplight. Now, the trooper wasn't as happy to see me that night as he was the night before, but it was really an eye-opener for me as how important getting a good 8 hours of healthy sleep is.
Captain Moran.
We have, as you said, the dormitory style of sleeping arrangements, and I've yet to go to a firehouse where I haven't been exposed to at least one CPAP machine. In the firehouse that I was at, we had at least 3 going out of 12 guys. We're self-insured. We take the health of our firefighters extremely serious. So whatever they need to stay healthy, and we're looking at the long-term health effects, the increase of cancer rate, the increase of, cardiovascular disease. It's all attributed to this lack of sleep that everybody's getting. A lot of people on the shift work, that's 20% of the workforce is on some sort of a shift work. So it's not just the public safety side. It's countrywide. I mean, there's 60 to 70% of all Americans get less than 6 hours of sleep a night.
In my reporting, I interviewed Dr. Phyllis Z, and she's a chief of sleep medicine and neurology and director of circadian sleep at Northwestern University. And she really highlighted that all of the research shows that, of course, lack of sleep is bad, but those most at risk are people who have rotating shifts, swing shifts. So, of course, we have police departments or police officers, but, anybody who's constantly getting their shift changed and is going to have to work different crazy hours, sometimes in those careers or those jobs, there isn't a lot of medical insurance resources available. And it's really, really interesting because then we see a lot of substance abuse disorder happening in specifically swing shift, and long-term metabolic cardiovascular disease is, just very, very high for those type of workers. So we do have to think about what are the resources for people, especially if they're in these type of shifts.
Is that part of, the point you made before we went to the break was that we don't really focus on sleep as much as we should as part of a healthy lifestyle. Do we need to see a shift in not just the public sector, but the private sector as well? Corporate culture saying that yes, this needs to be something that is not only covered but encouraged.
Definitely, and one of the I spoke to a lot of different professions, one of them being consultants. A lot of times they're consulting in other countries, so India or China, and they are supposed to be available at any time during the 24-hour, life. So they are taking calls from different people. And we see our first responders. We see people consulting. We see people work in factories or warehouses. And it's one of these things where you say, I didn't get any sleep last night, or I have 2 jobs and I go from one job to the other job. And sometimes it's out of necessity, and we really don't even question the factor of the lack of sleep that they're getting.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about sleep wellness today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or do what Jason has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Jason, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. So I just want to make a quick comment and maybe a follow-up question. But I was a paramedic for a lot of years, and now I work in a functional medicine practice here in Carmel, Indiana. And one of the things that I talk with patients about quite a bit, actually, is sleep health and their own sleep health. And I share with them that one of the few aha moments I had in my career was recognizing that probably back in 8th or 9th grade, I think we learned that, as an organism, we spend 30% of our time sleeping, or we should spend that much time sleeping. So the question is, if an organism spends that much time engaged in any activity, how important is that activity to the overall health of the organism? And are we doing enough maybe not just necessarily in the police, fire, or corporate world, but are we doing enough in a societal aspect to actually test and make sure that we are all getting good sleep health and starting early? And I'll take any comments off air. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call.
Yeah, and it's been very interesting kind of covering and talking about sleep in with regards to health. I cover health, and so, of course, people always say, yes, access to health is important, exercise, eating, a lot of these, mental health awareness, everything. Sleep is such a huge component in all of those things, especially mental health and mental well-being. So it's interesting talking to people and saying, well, it's always in the back burner. Sleep is like the last thing on your list. You have a list full of things to do every day. You have kids, you have a job, you have other responsibilities. If you get to sleep, that's great. If not, well, there's not a priority in sleep right now, and mm-hmm. with regards to the reporting that I've done or seen. And we kind of have to question that.
How much of it is I'm listening to this, if I'm being absolutely honest, I think of time sleeping as time wasted. It means I can't do things, da-da-da, and all of that. It's something I have to do rather than something I look forward to doing. And it sounds like that mindset is actually a huge part of the problem here. Captain Moran is nodding his head.
That is definitely a big problem. And the availability of stimulants from not getting a long night of sleep is it's more prevalent now than any time, previous to now. So I think we fool ourselves with being alert and awake and really being able to do a good job and function at a high capacity, make good decisions, have a good mood to be with our loved ones, with our families, to be clear and present-minded. And then we overuse the stimulants, and then we get to bed and we can't fall asleep. So then we take something else to fall asleep. And you get into this vicious cycle of not fixing the problem.
We have a comment by a listener named Joe via Twitter. And again, if you want to join the conversation via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. Joe writes, truckers are forced into insane sleep patterns by shipping companies in order to maximize DOT regulations. They drive heavy machinery with dangerous cargo on our roads and highways. We've alluded to this, but we probably ought to talk about, and I think Sergeant Snyder talked about it, falling asleep at the wheel and something of all. We should talk about really the threats to public health that all of this presents. I mean, there's a lot of focus on driving while intoxicated or under the influence, but very little discussion of driving while fatigued. Sergeant Snyder.
Yeah, so one of the things that we talk about when we talk to officers about sleep, and it's the stat that going 18 to 24 hours without sleep is equivalent to a blood alcohol content of 0.05 to 0.08. I'll jokingly say sometimes is, we won't tolerate drunk driving, but we think nothing of having officers or firefighters or nurses or doctors work 8, 12-hour shift and maybe going 24 hours without sleep. And it's a real detriment to our ability to operate heavy machinery, such as a truck driver or a police car or a fire truck or an ambulance. Or do you really want your doctor that's operating on you to have been up for the last 18 hours? Or do you want that officer who's, worked an 8-hour shift, been to court, maybe gotten an hour or two of sleep, and now he's at your door because of a domestic situation that they need to handle? It becomes a real issue for the public.
What are some of the other, so far we've focused on, obviously because we have police officers and firemen in the studio, but what are some of the, and we've talked with truck drivers, but what are some of the other professions where the concerns to community health are significant?
Yeah, after my reporting, I got some messages and tweets of my friends who are nurses, and they're telling me, why didn't you interview a nurse? Surgeons, I think people who really, I mean, you go into a doctor's office, and I want to ask my doctor, like, when's the last time you fell asleep, and how good of a sleep did you get? Because we don't think about those things when we're with first responders, doctors, just people who are constantly, they have to be constantly available on their phone, even if you're on call. I think that that's one of the things that I learned most about. There are lots of jobs where you're on call. Well, what does that mean? That means you have to be available. So, yeah, you might be at home. You might be sleeping, but you can just get a phone call at any moment. So I don't know if you guys have any others.
Yeah, I'll share a story. I like to tell stories about my wife anyways. But
That's dangerous. Go
ahead. She's a nurse, yeah. And she's a triathlete. And I'll even use this in training. She had a night where she had worked a 12-hour shift, had to stay over. So now we're looking at 14, 16 hours. She had a triathlon the next day. She didn't get a good night's sleep that night. And there's a picture of her as she's trying to leave the corral from the switching over from the swim to the bike where her bicycle helmet's on backwards. And so I talk about here's a little bit of stress, some sleep deprivation, and the simplest thing is putting on a bicycle helmet had become difficult for her. And there's really not a whole lot of stress in putting on a bicycle helmet. Now switch that around. Mm-hmm. Now you have a firefighter responding to a fire. You have a police officer responding to an active shooter. We're talking about being able to make decisions quickly and a rapidly developing situation that's got a lot at stake.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Jeffrey. And again, if you want to join the conversation by email, you can send your note, your question to nolimits@wfyi.org. Jeffrey writes, can anyone on your panel discuss the side effects, if any, of certain SSRI medications? It's been an interest of mine, and I have noticed a significant difference in the type, length, and quality of sleep with people that I love and who are in my life that take these medications.
I don't have that much to say about an SSRI medication. If this is something where people are going to their doctor or their physician and talking about their problems with regards to sleep, it's very important. And it's something that people don't generally talk about with their doctor. And I think that it's changing. It's definitely changing with regards to, like, if doctors are asking how much sleep you're getting and how you can address better sleep and better tips. But it is one of those things where if you're not getting good quality sleep and you are seeing side effects of, you know, the lack of sleep in your everyday life, you really do need to talk to a doctor about it and talk to an expert that can kind of give you better advice on what to do.
Well, let's talk a bit about that. What are some of the signs that you are not getting? What should be the signal that you aren't getting and that you might have a problem?
So sleep research shows it's lack of sleep is detrimental to your health. And you will see it in everybody's different, obviously, but it will manifest itself in a lot of different ways. But the first sign is that you are sick and you're going to the doctor and now you are on medication, whether that's blood pressure medication, whether it's your weight gain, whether it's anything regards to something, all of a sudden you need medication. And, well, that could all be stemming from the fact that you don't get enough sleep or you have not prioritized sleep. And I know when I interviewed Sergeant Snyder, that was one of the key things that he talked about. It was a wake-up call for him as well.
Yeah, so when I my first year on the police department, my weight went up to well over 200 pounds, and I was on blood pressure medication and heart rate medication. And eventually my doctor told me that you've got to get onto a different shift because this shift is slowly killing you. And that's what we see with officers. If you notice, officers will have that weight gain around their belt. Mm-hmm. That's where our body stores fat. And lack of sleep inhibits our ability to burn and process fat. You'll see officers with mental health issues, anxiety and depression because of a lack of sleep. They're not able to clean out their mind after a day of working and being exposed to absurd amounts of stress and trauma day after day after day.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about sleep wellness, about how it can be achieved, what it means, and also what it can mean to not just your health, but the safety of all those around you if you don't practice good sleep patterns. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are side effects reporter Araceli Gomez Aldana, Indianapolis Fire Department Captain Chris Moran, and Indianapolis Metro Police Department Sergeant Aaron Snyder. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. Today's show is part of our partnership with Side Effects Public Media, where we work together to have community conversations about important public health issues. Today we're talking about sleep wellness and support and about the ways that it can affect not just your health but the safety of people around you. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Side Effects reporter Araceli Gomez Aldana, Indianapolis Fire Department Captain Chris Moran, and Indianapolis Metro Police Department Sergeant Aaron Snyder. We have a comment from a listener named James via Facebook. And again, to find join the conversation via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. James writes, "What about restorative napping? I have always thought that one sure sign of a civilized society is one that encourages naps, followed by tea," he says with a smile. Araceli.
I love naps. I always recommend naps. I feel like they can't hurt. And it is one of those things that if it fits into your schedule, not long naps. I know there's like a lot of talk between do naps actually help? But if you can just kind of give your mind a rest for a little bit, I'm a big proponent. I don't know how you guys feel
well,
about
naps. Part of what I was thinking is, I just finished reading Andrew Roberts' massive biography of Churchill. And he, during the years when he was prime minister during World War II, he would break his day he'd have like a 4 or 5 hour period where he would sleep, then he would get up and work, and then he'd take another 4 or 5 hour period of sleep. And he argued, well, it was a way to get two work days into one 24-hour cycle that way. Is some of this, I'm going to take some liberties here, I guess, with James, with your question, is some of this also that we tend to think of sleep as only occurring in one way, that, you know, a nap, or maybe we need, more than one period of sleep during a 24-hour period? I'll start with Sergeant Snyder on that one.
I think the most important thing to remember with napping, and I'm a proponent of it as well, is that you want to make sure that you get into that deep sleep, that REM cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the studies that I've read is that too short of a nap, all it does is just continues that fatigue, and you wake up not feeling rested or restored. So you want to make sure that you can drop down into that REM deep sleep, and then you want to try to balance that out. And so that would be my recommendation to officers if they were looking at napping, to say, make sure you're down long enough to get a good deep sleep.
And how long is long enough?
Usually about 45 minutes to an hour. If not, you're going to have to extend that to 2 hours to get through that second set of REM sleep.
Well, we ought to talk about the other part. You know, since I mentioned the Churchill thing, the other piece of the reason that he may have needed to have those is apparently he, drank a staggering amount of alcohol.
That he did.
During that,
yeah. That he
during
did.
That period.
High stress.
To
yes.
Well, to read that is to think, oh, my God, how is he not just fainting at the desk or whatever? So we've talked an awful lot about the dangers. What constitutes good sleep habits then? I'll start with Araceli on this.
Yeah, there's a lot of research, and of course, then there's research that says napping isn't good, and all of this stuff. One of the things that I found was that the time that you do go to bed, if it's a regular time, if it's structured, if you are, your body kind of gets used to, if you have, for say, a bedtime, that's always beneficial if you are looking to get good night's rest. I don't know if you...
Yeah, and I would say it's maintaining that ritual, staying off the electronic devices after a certain period of time. I would also say avoid eating heavy meals before you go to bed. Avoid sugar or stimulant meals like caffeine. Me personally, I try not to drink coffee after noon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon. If not, it keeps me up at night. Making sure the room's dark, clean, and cool. Those would be some good, healthy routines to have before you go to bed.
And how much of this, because we've alluded to this but not really explored it, is that you know, that people have different needs. I mean, I know, I guess Sergeant Snyder talked about his wife. I'll take the risk of talking about mine, particularly when our children were very, very young. You know, I have always been able to function with a certain amount of sleep deprivation, which at the time frustrated my wife to no end, because we joke that she definitely needs her 8 hours of sleep every night. And if they aren't 8 consecutive hours, which is almost impossible to have with a newborn, they really need to be about 15 during the course of a day. I could get along without the sleep. I'm not saying I was at the top of my form all the time, but I could get along and function in ways that were difficult for her to do so. I mean, the things that break down, you know, individual responses to not getting enough sleep, and do we need different amounts?
Yes, I when I was talking to sleep experts on the subject, everyone is different, of course, and we all have different bodies and everything, but it is true that some people need more than others. When I was talking to the director of performance health for the Bulls in particular, he said, you know, athletes, they have to perform at very high levels. So they maybe the recommended sleep on average is 8 hours of sleep. Well, they should be getting 10 hours of sleep at least. People that are in like teenage years that are kind of developing, they need more sleep as well. And it's one of those things, even if you're stressed out at work, if you have a big deadline coming up, or if you have to do something really, you know, different or extra at work, you should be getting more hours of sleep in that time. And I think it's like we're the opposite, right? So if like you're really stressed at work, you have a deadline at work, you're sleeping less. Or maybe teenagers are staying up playing video games or on their phone and they're not getting enough sleep. So you really have to pay attention to your body and try to figure out what is the best option for you. But it is true that everybody needs different things at different times.
How much of it's also a question of, you know, in the other context that I work in and in education, there's a lot of research that shows that, in fact, young people's biorhythms, their brains don't really engage until about 10:30 in the morning. That there is a reason that historically, you know, high school and college students have hated 8 a.m. classes or earlier. How does this, and I'll broaden the question, maybe start with Captain Moran, but how does this evolve over time? You know, you've got some older firefighters and some younger ones. Are their needs different?
Absolutely. I think that just kind of goes hand in hand with fitness levels or medications or life expectancies. Everybody's completely different. How somebody responds to a certain level of stimulus or not stimulus, as in sleep, is going to be completely individualized. And I think we really need to kind of focus on what the sleep is designed to do. So we talked a little bit about napping, and napping's been proven to help with decision-making skills. But the longer circadian rhythm, when you go through it like 2 or 3 times, that's when the hormonal, you know, response will change. That's when you restore your cell tissues. That's when you decompress and you kind of start to analyze and deal with stressful situations in the day mentally, depression, that kind of stuff. So the napping is good for the decision-making skills, fine, you know, quick type of stuff. But that doesn't take away from, you know, getting through a circadian rhythm is usually about 120 minutes. And we usually go through 3 to 4 of those a night. The third and the fourth are the most important for recovery of mental health. So we start talking about depression and being able to handle, you know, situations and that kind of stuff. Those are the most important ones to make sure you're getting. Another, just we kind of talked about tips and stuff like that. I like to tell people, if they're one of the types of people that constantly has stuff running through their head and they can't shut it up, they got to, oh, God, I forgot I've got to do this tomorrow. I like to keep a journal just next to the bed so I can write it down. Mm-hmm. That gives me the ability to let it go in my head so I'm not constantly thinking about it and interrupting my sleep.
So, you know, as we're talking about this, this is not a conversation that probably would have taken place 20 years ago, which tells me, you know, also that we're in still the relatively early stages of understanding the importance of sleep. What do you know, as we come to grasp the implications of this problem, Araceli, but I want to hear everybody's thoughts on this. How do you think it's going to change the way, you know, we live, the way we approach work, the way we approach structuring our days and all of that? I'll start with Araceli and I'll just go right on down the line.
Yeah, I think that we have gotten to a point where, especially here in the United States, where it's just all about work and all about productivity and efficiency and everything. And I think that we're seeing a lot of health problems. And so we're going to have to take a step back at some point and start kind of reflecting on what's causing all of those health problems. And it's going to take some time from our doctors and even technology that can help us now kind of figure out how much sleep we're getting, how well of the quality of that sleep that we're getting. And hoping that with a lot of this other research that is happening and more reporting that comes out of it, and also industries, you know, talking about, you know, we're all human and we all need sleep and there's nothing wrong with taking naps and doing even at-home assessments like we were talking off air. You can check what you know, a test, take a test on the questionnaires about what is your sleep like, and kind of be more proactive instead of reactive about our health. And hopefully this is one of those things where people say, yes, I can eat healthy, I can exercise daily, and I can get great sleep. And I think that that's the first step.
Captain Moran.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it's you know, like the full circle type of approach. You don't just want one piece of that pie. It's fitness, nutrition, sleep, you know, general health type of stuff. The discussion is great. I mean, we have talks about it, you know, pretty regularly. And I think that's the first step. Anytime there's a change in the medical field, it definitely takes a long time. It takes a lot of research, and research takes a lot of time. Changing the mentality of the sleep paradigm as being weak or lazy, that's going to be a very difficult thing to tackle. It's just, as far as the conversation, we got to do that. I'm a big fan of, if you don't track it, it will never change. So there's tons of technology out there that you can track, you can wear, that monitors your sleep. It's trackable, it's changeable. You can find out if you did something and it made it better, that you could use that and repeat that. If you tried something and it didn't work, well, don't do that again, you know? But if we just kind of take a passenger seat to our health, we get what we got. You know, some unhealthy, poor habits, and we're just kind of coasting through life and not taking charge of our own bodies.
Sergeant Snyder.
I think for the police department, it's going to be a continuous cultural change in valuing sleep and recognizing not just sleep, but mental health, physical health, as valuable for our officers to keep them healthy and more productive. There's a small police department, Rockford, Illinois, who I was out there with them last year. Their chief was actually putting in sleep rooms at their headquarters so officers didn't have to drive home, didn't drive back in for morning court. They could actually stay there and get some sleep. It'll be things where we recognize that officers maybe have 8 a.m. court, begin their late shift, and we don't schedule them for 8 a.m. court anymore. Maybe we schedule them for 1 p.m. court, but that's going to take work between the prosecutor's office and the police department to make those things happen.
So as I'm listening to this, we talk about how we have to get past, how much of this is also that it's hardwired? I mean, I'm thinking experience just about every parent will recall is you've got a very young child who is, you know, clearly exhausted and all but out on his or her feet, and you suggest either a nap or bedtime, and immediately the response is, I'm not tired, you know, and that there's this tremendous pushback on that. And I'm not sure that that's a cultural thing where they're taught that it's a sign of weakness. It's just a resistance that seems to be inherent to going to sleep, which I would think would be part of, and let's face it, I mean, there is a certain vulnerability in sleep, too, because you're not aware of your surroundings, which is why so many animals circle before they go to sleep and all of that sort of stuff. So how much of this is overcoming that really sort of instinctive drive? Captain Moran.
I think that's probably the most important thing is breaking that paradigm of self-respect, self-reliance, and looking at yourself and being honest and saying, you know, I could push through this. Absolutely, you can. It's not that you can. It's not a challenge. But what are the ramifications from doing that time after time? You set that precedent, and now it becomes just what you have to do. So you take your body's ability to listen, and you kind of shut up all those signs and self-medicate, do all other kinds of destructive habits, all because you couldn't admit that you were tired and needed some sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It's a natural thing. You know, it'd be like saying, you know, I don't need water. Mm-hmm. The weakness is water. I don't need water. We know that that's not true. You need water. And I think the same could be said for sleep.
Sergeant Snyder, I think the point, though, I'm making here is that there's something that we aren't, that notions of toughness or whatever are culturally learned. I would argue, at least with small kids, there's something that is almost instinctual that says we need to resist going to sleep. And how do you override that?
Well, look at us as adults. How many people didn't get a full night's sleep last night because they stayed up and watched the finals of the NCAAs?
I'll take the fifth on that one.
So it's not just a cultural thing with law enforcement or public safety or the medical field. I think it's just a society as whole is that there's so much out there now to grab our attention. We're not taking time to check in on ourselves. And I think that's what happens is that, okay, well, I'll stay up and watch one more TV show. Or let me go through Facebook one more time to see, you know, what the neighbor down the street's doing. Or, you know, whatever it is that's taken our attention now. And we're just not slowing down and focusing on our own health and wellness. And sleep just happens to be right now that one aspect that is glaring that says, hey, listen, we're, as a society, we're not getting enough sleep.
Araceli, where does your reporting go from here?
Yes, I can really report on this for I have a lot of story ideas with regards to sleep, and I think a lot of it comes back to, you know, are there resources for regular people to access healthy sleep habits? And what is it like for people who are maybe low income, low socioeconomic status, and their sleep, and the correlation there between if we're talking about other high risk behavior? So I think I'm going to focus on that, and I'll keep you guys updated.
And if people would like to track the reporting you have done already, where could they go to find it?
Yes, so you can get on Twitter and look me up on Twitter and follow me and follow WFYI, follow Side Effects Public Media, and we also post all of the stories on WFYI.org.
And the Side Effects, they can look up there too.
That's right.
Well, I think that will have to be the last word, at least for this time. I'm sure we will talk again. I'd like to thank my guest, Side Effects reporter Araceli Gomez-Aldana, Indianapolis Fire Department Captain Chris Moran, and Indianapolis Metro Police Department Sergeant Aaron Snyder for an anomaly discussion and an enlightening and enlivening discussion about sleep. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.